Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And got a video you think should be included in our weekly online video picks? Send the link to Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Put the word video in the subject line. This week's picks include an engineer's homage to his three cats. See our online video picks at WNYC.org. Click on video. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, Judge Arthur Cooperman is scheduled to deliver his verdicts in the Sean Bell police trial. We will be starting this program early tomorrow, as soon as the verdicts are handed down, probably just a few minutes past 9. And right now we'll open up the phones for anyone who's been following the case for the verdicts according to you. Should Detectives Michael Oliver or Giscard Asnora be convicted of manslaughter or anything less for their role in the shooting? Should Detective Mark Cooper be convicted of reckless endangerment, a much lower charge, the only thing he's charged with? Call us. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If convicted, do these officers deserve to go to prison for how they acted on the job? What do you think? 212-433-9692. Those arguing for a guilty verdict say there was no legal excuse for pursuing the unarmed Bell and his friends the way they did, for failing to adequately identify themselves as police officers, especially in Asnora's case. He approached them first, and for not stopping to assess the situation during their 50-shot barrage, especially in Detective Oliver's case, he fired 31 of those shots. But the defenders of the police say they were acting in the line of duty, not out to hurt anyone. Oliver never fired his weapon before in his 13 years as a cop. The situation led them to believe, however falsely, however tragically, that they were in jeopardy, and whatever punishment they incur, it should not be criminal. So those are the two sides in a really squashed down nutshell. But tomorrow we get the actual verdict. And now that the entire trial has been conducted, we didn't want to have a call in like this during the trial when we were doing weekly updates. But now that it's all been done, what do you think represents justice here? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we hope those of you who call were following the trial closely enough to be familiar with the evidence, at least as presented to you in the media. If you've been following it, what do you think now that all the evidence has been leading up to? Guilty or not guilty on any or all of the charges? 212-433-9692, or post your thoughts to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. With us to help take your calls is someone who's been in the courtroom for pretty much the whole trial and who can help fact check some stuff as we go along here. New York Times correspondent Michael Wilson. Hi, Michael. Welcome back.
Good morning.
So let's just start with the callers. Noah in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Noah.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. What do you think?
Well, I think that all the charges are a little light to begin with, and they should all definitely be convicted. My main concern with the whole trial was that, I mean, if it's an undercover agent, if you're running at someone with a gun out, anyone's first concern is going to be to remove yourself from the situation. Even if someone is yelling, "Please stop," how do you know they're a police officer? Even if they show a badge, the whole undercover thing is just such a problem that if they're trying to leave and not get shot, well, the cops should be charged.
Noah, thank you very much. Jamil in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jamil.
Yes, how you doing there, Brian?
All right.
I agree. The other officers who follow the procedure, no. But Oliver definitely should be charged with the highest count and sent to prison. That's my opinion.
Because he didn't stop to assess sufficiently after he emptied his gun before he reloaded?
Yes, because you remember the other officers, they did exactly what the procedures required. To stop, they fired, and stopped to assess the situation. But Oliver just went buck wild and just continued firing even after everybody else stopped. So it's obvious.
And if he went wild out of fear, should that be a manslaughter charge or should that be a manslaughter conviction?
I'm not believing that for one minute. The cops are afraid. Then they shouldn't be police officers if they're that scared. They tried to use that type of excuse before.
What do you think motivated him then?
Well, that's a good question. I really can't tell you, but I definitely do not believe a fear.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely do, because they're undercover in an environment and they have total control of the situation. So I'm not buying that mm-hmm. fear. Cops, when they kill, they use that, well, we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who have guns and they're afraid. So I don't believe that story. I'm not buying it.
Jamil, thank you very much. So Michael Wilson from The Times, how much is the judge looking at the motivation here? And how much would that even be a factor, what Jamil and I were just discussing, whether Michael Oliver was believably in a state of fear when he reloaded and kept firing?
Well, you know, what plays a role in this we haven't talked too much about is the technology of the gun. Michael Oliver just, the gun stopped shooting, and that can happen because it's empty, which was the case, or because it has jammed. And you're just trained automatically, like robotically, to remove the clip and put in a new one. So he would claim he was unaware that he had just fired 16 rounds. For all he knew, he hadn't fired any yet. He didn't know. You know, all he knew was that his gun stopped shooting. That's his grand jury testimony.
That's his grand. And is it true, as a matter of fact, what the caller said, that the other officers who were shooting stopped and reassessed, and Oliver didn't, and so he was different in some way behaviorally from them?
No. The only officer that stopped sort of early is Michael Carey. He stopped, he testified in the trial, because Detective Isnora was walking into his line of fire, and he stopped out of concern for striking his fellow officer. But Detective Isnora never stopped firing. Detective Oliver never stopped firing. And the other two, Cooper and Headley, you know, fired only four rounds between them and stopped when everything in general stopped.
Roger in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Roger.
Yes, Brian. I just want to say that I have carefully, you know, sort of scrutinized the stories of the case and tried to follow them. And in terms of whether, you know, you sort of see a smoking gun that indicates somebody is culpable or not culpable, or the police that should have or should not have been shooting, it's almost impossible for the uninitiated, unsophisticated reader to figure out who's right and wrong. But I think so. I think there's a good chance they may be acquitted. But I want to say that anybody using their just plain good old common sense would say this is an outrage. And this is one of those cases where I think, in a sense, the law almost obscures the gut truth of the, you know, the matter. And I think another case would be the Diallo case, where somebody was, you know, the officers were acquitted, but everybody knows it was clearly an unjustified shooting. So that's my point.
Where's the line between unjustified and criminal to you? Or is there no line? If it was unjustified, then it was criminal.
Well, that's what I really, it seems that the lawyers, you know, defending the police officers, are trying to do everything they can to, you know, sort of puncture, you know, to make cast doubt on whatever allegations have been made. So as John Bell's fiance said, you know, at one point there was a question whether they were drunk. They said, why should somebody be shot for being drunk? And I think that the criminality of it is very hard for somebody, not unsophisticated, but, you know, it's just hard, I think, for the average person mm-hmm. to figure out where the criminal mm-hmm. liability lies.
Roger, thank you. And Michael Wilson from The Times, what about that? What is the judge grappling with respect to that line between a tragic mistake and a criminal act?
As we were told in court by the attorneys, it is not against the law to make a mistake, to be mistakenly justified. I think perhaps he's grappling
mistakenly unjustified.
Mistakenly unjustified, you're right. To believe yourself to be justified, to believe that the Joseph Guzman had a gun, and to find out that that was not the case, the defense would argue is not illegal. That will be that's something he's going to be grappling with.
A major screw up is not necessarily a crime.
Exactly.
Which leads to, I think, Jason in Manhattan's question. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I wanted to ask, I don't really know much of the details of the case, but assuming they are found innocent because it's a royal screw-up, what punishments do they face from the police department, like for gross incompetence? Can they be still fired? Say does the jury or the judge have in telling the police department what to do with these policemen concerning their jobs and future employment?
It's a good question. If they're found not guilty of crimes, Michael, what else can they be punished for and how?
Well, historically in New York City, officers who are acquitted in situations like this, another shoe eventually falls. In most cases, there is there's a department investigation. In most of those cases, that leads to a department trial. And the burden of proof is lower in such a trial than it is in a criminal court. And it's not unusual for an officer to be terminated after that trial. So these officers, you know, could face loss of their jobs if they are acquitted.
And the city could be paying out large multi-million-dollar damage awards in the civil suits that have been filed by the victims.
Right.
And I don't know if that's anybody's sense of justice or not, but it could be that the I don't know if that's anybody's sense of justice, but it could wind up that they don't go to jail, but the city has to pay big damages.
Correct. Then in rare cases, actually quite rare, there's federal prosecutors have followed up with a civil rights case. That's happened to officers in the past. Whether or not, you know, there's been talk that in the event of an acquittal, the Bell family has said that they will seek a federal charges. Whether or not that would come to pass, is unclear. A lot of people think, well, this might not be a civil rights case.
Annette in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Annette.
Good morning, Brian. This judge must send a message to the public, and because in the case of Diallo, Patrice Dorsman, you cannot let these police officers get off with sloppy police work and then cover up for it after they do the shooting. This is very clear to me that it was very sloppy and unprofessional police work, and they should pay the price because innocent life was lost in the Diallo case, Patrick Dorsman, and now the Bell case.
Well, that's another important word, I think, sloppy, because if the judge, Michael Wilson, finds, and thank you, Annette, finds that this was sloppy police work, it could potentially be criminally sloppy, couldn't it?
Yeah, and that's where I think you take into account the reckless endangerment charges, which all three officers face. That's as close to sort of the sloppy charges as you're going to get. I don't know the manslaughter. Sloppy police work, I don't know that they're going to get convicted on manslaughter.
Right. But if it was sloppy in terms of not taking the proper steps to identify themselves as police officers when they were undercover, so they were in plain clothes, or sloppy approaching Bell and his party in the first place when it was the other guy who they really thought had a gun, but he was driving away.
Yeah, see, none of that is in the charges. The reckless endangerment charges them with risking injury recklessly to others on Liverpool Street by firing their guns.
To others, not to Bell and Guzman and Benefield.
To anyone.
Uh-huh.
That there are people on, yes. No, that's a good point, yeah, to others, the people on the...
I see, others other than themselves, the shooters.
Right.
So that includes the victims and any bystanders by the way they conducted themselves.
Yes.
Alex, well, what happens if that happens? If they're all convicted of reckless endangerment, how much time, if any, do they get?
They may not get any. They could get up to a year in prison. It's a verdict that's unlikely to please either side.
Alex in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex. Alex, are you there? Oh, let me press the right button and talk to Alex. Hi, Alex. Now we got you.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to say I'm a law student right now, and I would say strictly from like a legal point of view that getting a manslaughter charge on these three police officers is going to be very, very difficult, as it often is very difficult to get very serious charges against police officers. And I think from a legal point of view, very difficult. Unlike a more emotional or community-based view, I think it's more likely that Oliver will get convicted than the other two. So I just think that if we're just strictly legal, I think they all walk, but if they want to take other things into account, I think Oliver's probably going to be convicted.
Well, I realize you're just a law student, so you don't have experience out there yet.
No, I don't.
And I don't want to demean you by saying just, but you know what I mean.
Oh,
when you talk about the possibility that emotion will play into Oliver, who fired 31 shots, being convicted, this is a judge, a 74-year-old, hardened, wizened judge, who's going to make this ruling on his own without a jury. Do you think that emotion can play into his result?
I think he's not someone who lives in a bubble, not someone who lives in some sort of hermetically sealed area. He knows that this case is going to have repercussions in the city, and that the actions by Oliver were just enough to justify a different ruling for him, or a different verdict for him than for
that's,
the other two.
That's your prediction. That's saying politics come into play in the judge's decision. Michael Wilson, do you think, this is just speculation on your part, can politics come into play with Judge Arthur Kupperman? Just give me 20 seconds on this.
Well, yes, politics can always come into play. The defense is confident that they won't. Justice Kupperman, they have faith in yeah. him that he is he's gonna do the right thing. On
Richard,
paper, he has to retire next year. His political aspirations days are sort of behind him.
Richard in Manhattan, 20 seconds.
Okay, we ask the cops to protect us against the worst elements in society. They're often in dangerous situations because there are too many guns on the street, so they should be given the benefit of the doubt. No matter the number of shots fired is irrelevant, and I agree with Alex that emotion will play a part.
Or if they screwed up and endangered people by not following police procedure properly, they shouldn't be held legally accountable for that?
No.
Richard, thank you. Well, we heard people who think they definitely should be all convicted, some or none. I thank Michael Wilson, who's been covering the trial, for joining us again today. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
And again, we'll be starting this program early tomorrow as soon as the verdicts are handed down, right around 9 o'clock. Talk to you then. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.